cast, didn't you?
I was lucky. How many others have done the same? Very few, I suppose. The waterworm is armored and fierce. Sometimes you must expend several harpoons, despite the strength of your lance arm, to kill the beast. So it has been in my experience.
What do you mean?
Petrock rolled over again and adjusted his voxlink so he broadcast the whole of Damocles.
Worms are hard to kill. You may know where to strike them, but still it may take many casts. Brother Andromach, prepare your plasma gun and repeat your strike on my command. Damocles, let us repeat our cast.
Petrock looked back at Priad.
With your permission, of course.
I grant it gratefully, but I'm not sure.
Any who are brave enough to take a worm with the first strike have not the benefit of knowing it is wise to strike again.
Sir?
Now, Andromach!
Petrock bellowed. Brother Andromach swung back out of cover again and sent a boiling spear of plasma fire across at the wall. It blistered and scorched the Iden City fortification. As soon as the blast stopped, the enemy renewed its shooting. A blitz of splinter fire and las rounds hosed the approach. Rock and earth threw up in thousands of individual impact geysers. The green boulder sheltering Xander fractured and exploded, sending him scrabbling for better protection.
Again, Andromach! Petrock cried over the voxlink. Strike again!
Andromach did, staying on his feet and taking a glancing deflection to the shoulder as he triggered his massive weapon. Something shivered as his plasma fire touched it. A split, low down, branched up into jagged cracks. It was like watching a leafless tree grow. Andromach blasted again for good measure. A section of wall buckled and tore down, spilling dark, shattered bodies with it. A further explosion blew the wall out. Debris rained down, and a tidal wave of green dust choked its way down the approach.
"Now, for Charybdis!" Petrock cried.
Enhancing their optics against the wall of smoke, Damocles' squad advanced behind him towards the breach. Crushed, broken bodies lay in the rubble. Black, lean, hooked things, or burst, pallid, fleshy things with gaping mouths. The marines chose not to look at either. They scrambled up the rubble after Petrock and Priad, bolters barking up into the darkness that welcomed them. The city's eastern flank was open to them, and they were biting into its innards. Petrock led the way, his power sword shrieking in the air. Priad kept his distance from the charging librarian, blasting with his bolter, fanning the men into the breach. Within 10 minutes, they had captured the first section of the wall. Petrock was pressing on, his sword cleaving through the defenders. Shadowy, flickering beings who darted around him quickly, but none so quick as to avoid his blade. Belus drank well of the dark kind's blood. Petrock left a trail of pieces behind him, severed scissor hands, cloven horned helmets, split torsos. Damocles closed in after the great hero, following the trail of destruction. They moved wide in support, edging around into side corridors and chambers, flanking Petrock. The city had been razed centuries before, built from local stone, cut into huge blocks, and smoothed into almost seamless walls. Ornate light globes ran along walls or were suspended from the ceilings, and the white light reflected off the green stone, making everything lambent and pale. It reminded Priad of the waters of Ithaca, of the times he had dived down beneath, into the green, into the silence. There was no silence here. Rumbling blasts, screams, shrieks from the fallen foe, the chatter of bolters, and the wail of the plasma gun. Vox traffic snapped back and forth between the space marines, and they could all hear the angry hum of Petrock's power sword. Priad ducked back as a salvo of rounds tore the corner off a wall before him, flaking green stone in all directions. Then he was on top of the foe, a gibbering thing in segmented red armor, its eyes yellow slits in its visor. It reeled at him with a biform blade weapon, raising a bladed firearm in the other clawed hand. Priad hit it with a bolter round that exploded in the middle of its chest and blew it across the chamber where it dropped, squealing, limbs thrashing in a death frenzy. Its blood painted semicircles across the wall above it. Andromach burned corridors and hallways out with his plasma gun, chanting the hymn of Charybdis as he went. Any movement, any twitch of dark limb or slender blade, and he boiled the air of the chamber, scorching the stonework. Calegnis and Pindor found a way to the right, held fast by piled furniture and flakboards. Single splinter shots stung down at them from the makeshift strongpoint. They rushed it together, their power and weight, bringing the entire barricade down over the dark Eldar defending it. There was a brief, confused, hand-to-hand fight in the jumbled wreckage. Pindor shot one at close range, and then smashed the head of another into the wall with his right fist. Calegnis throttled the third. They pushed deeper. Parted from Calegnis briefly, Pindor found himself in a wide, featureless vault, where enemy assassins leapt out from the shadows. He slew them all with his bolter and his knife, in a frenzied combat that lasted 5 or 6 seconds, but which he would remember all his life. Xander, Cools, and Cylon drove forward into a munitions bunker and butchered 40 Dark Eldar in a straight fight. Cools's spent bolter was glowing white-hot as he used it to cudgel an assailant before throwing it aside and laying in with his blade. Natus, despite his wounds, kept up position outside with his bolter held in his remaining hand, picking off the Dark Eldar as they ran, one by one. Memnes half-carried Ilias forward, and the two of them laid down a crossfire that slaughtered the Eldar things in a haze of thermite smoke and blood. Priad was with Petrok, advancing into the depths of the eastern fortifications. The sergeant's lightning claw, eager for victims, smote Dark Eldar into smoldering pieces as he advanced. His bolter rattled out its funereal beat. Primals exploded all around him, fell back and fell down, weeping bloody matter onto the tiled floor. Petrok's power sword scythed through stone and brick and armor and flesh and left the sliced remains of the enemy as smoking meat debris behind him. He sang the hunting song of the Ithacans as he fought. It was the old lay, the custom verse of the worm hunters as they rode out to find their prey. Priad found himself joining in, singing along with the great hero, rejoicing in the slaughter and the blood fog. At last, Petrok bowed forward, sinking over, his bloodied sword set with its tip on the Iden City stone. He sighed.
"Master Petrok?" Priad asked, blasting at the last of the scum who flickered and reared out of the stone shadows about them.
"Phobor has taken the wall. Idon City is ours. The snakes have won the place."
Priad faltered.
"Then why do you look so pale, Master? Why so anguished?"
Petrok rose again, wiping blood from his cheek and raising the mighty power sword so that it sang in the air over his head.
"Because they are coming. The Dark Ones are coming. Fleeing in bloody panic, they move this way, abandoning the west of the city. Can Damocles handle a real fight?"
"On my oath, they can,"
Priad snarled. 40 seconds later, Damocles' squad got to prove that boast. Shrieking and fleeing from the city breach, the vast forces of the Dark Eldar retreated east and met the lone warriors of Damocles' squad. The Eldar were frenzied and keening, their senses of self-preservation entirely subsumed by their overwhelming need to escape. They gave no quarter, no sign of surrender or submission. They came as a black, armored torrent of thick, spiked evil that rushed out of the city like rats from a fire or water through a shattered dam. Overwhelmed, Priad killed and killed again, and went over in the tide of barbed fiends until Petrok hauled him up by the collar and set him back on his feet. Side by side, Petrok and Priad, with blade and claw, leveled the Eldar into a pile 20 deep. Blood was clogging the corridors now, rich, ruddy, stinking. Behind the Eldar, the warriors of Damocles' squad closed the trap. Andromach was beside his commanders, lancing his plasma beams into the choked confines, slaughtering dozens of the foe as they charged and panicked. Now Xander, his bolter coughing. Now Calegnis and Pindor smashing with their blades. Ilias, his face half gone, his weapon punching into the dark. Cylon, Memnes, Cools. A slaughterhouse. A killing field. 10 iron snakes damming the tide of the Dark Eldar. And fallen Natus outside, singing the lay, shooting down each and every straggler who got past the deadly blockade. Priad was washed with blood, and his bolter was dry-firing as Petroc steadied him.
"It is done, Priad. We have slain 1,000 over and again."
Priad pulled off his helmet and cast it to the ground. It floated away a few yards on a stream of enemy blood that gurgled down the hallway. The air was too close, too full of smoke and blood vapor. They had expended virtually all of their ammunition and most of their physical strength, but they had killed infamous numbers. But for the evidence of the bodies around them, the scale of their victory was unimaginable.
"This day will be remembered by Damocles,"
Priad whispered in the dampness and the dark. He began a small prayer of thanks to the Emperor.
"There is something else," Petroc replied curtly, moving ahead. "We're not done."
Chapter 4 They advanced again through the corridors, clambering over the heaps of the slain, firing their bolters into the heads of anything that twitched. Occasionally, the fierce heat of Brother Andromach's plasma gun seared down the tunnel. Memnes, old and trusted Memnes, came to Priad's side.
"This is wrong. Something is wrong."
Priad began to shake his head in reassurance, his lightning claw extended into the dark, but a voice echoed back to them.
"Memnes is right. Well felt, brother."
Petrock's voice in that dim place was loud and penetrating. Priad formed Damocles up behind him and moved towards the voice of the librarian. He found Petroc looking down over a chasm from which the white heat of the phosphor vents belched up unstintingly.
"Look,"
Petroc said, pointing down with his great sword. Priad craned and looked. There were charges below, alien packets of explosives strapped to the vent walls. That was the Dark Eldar's final legacy. They had mined Idon City and the phosphor vents. What they could not keep, no one would have.
"That explains the concentration of their strength at the east, and by suspicion. The Dark Ones knew that we would best them today. They kept us fighting long enough to be able to set this trap."
"Can we stop it?"
Petroc shrugged.
"Their materials are exotic and strange to us. I cannot guarantee understanding their explosive mechanisms."
"Then what?" Memnes asked.
"We take them off,"
Priad said directly.
"They've been placed here in order to trigger the phosphor seams. If we can't stop them exploding, we can at least ensure they explode away from their intended target."
Petroc looked at him with clear, frank eyes.
"You're right. The only way. Even if these things have been made tamper-proof or rigged to explode if touched, this is our duty."
Petroc leaned down into the vent and reached for the nearest charge packet. He had to use the tip of his sword to loosen its metal claws from the rock. He raised it slowly, a spiked black cube with a winking red telltale.
"Who's first?"
Memnes took it carefully, directly, and began to pace steadily down through the body-strewn corridors and out towards the breach in the wall. By the time he had disappeared from sight, another two charges had been pried loose, and Xander and Cylon were also on their way, nursing their deadly burdens. Another came free, and Andromach took it. Then one each for Ilias, Calignes, Pindor, and Cools. Petroc looked back from the open vent at Priad. Sweat coursed down his face. The sweat of stress, perhaps, though Priad knew the upwash of heat from the vent was huge.
"Four left,"
Petroc said.
"Two each, then. We can't wait for any to return."
"It'll be tricky managing two."
"We'll do it."
Petroc nodded as he reached lower to grab the last few. Priad had to hold on to Petroc's waist and legs so the librarian could get hold of the lowest set charges. The four came out, one by one. Priad lifted his two. They were heavy, and he had no desire to treat them roughly. As it was, he was sure the red telltales were flashing faster than they had on Memnes's explosive. Petroc hooked his sword in the loop of his belt and picked up the last two packets. Priad was already walking. Concentrating on keeping the bombs level and unshaken, it was difficult to remember the route immediately. Confusion had led them there, and the battle-scarred halls all looked the same. Priad reached a junction and heard Petroc behind him, urging him to go left. He did so. At another turn, he nearly slipped on the slick blood covering the floor. The telltales were definitely flashing faster now. Light showed ahead through the green gloom. White heat. Amber sky. The breach in the eastern wall of Idon City, where they had come in. Priad and Petrok scrambled outside, trying to remain upright in the sloped rubble and slurry, trying to keep the packets steady. The rest of Damocles had fallen back down the gully approach into the cover of the escarpment, leaving their packets scattered on the hillslope away from the castle wall. They cried out encouragement, urging haste, greater haste. The sergeant and the librarian put their packages down alongside the others that the rest of Damocles had borne gently out of the captured city. They looked like a strange crop of dark fruit planted out in the desert dust. The lights were almost strobing a continuous red. Run, Petrok said. Priad needed no encouragement. They raced together down the slope, crunching hard on the crystal rock, armor clanking, hydraulics buzzing. Priad heard the great librarian start to say something. The charges exploded. An almost simultaneous ripple of air-splitting detonations. A flash of white heat, brighter than the vents. A solid wall of shock force that hurled them both like harpoons. Chapter 5 Fingers of black smoke and a huge pall of dust stained the amber sky above Idon City. Air support and the blocky dark shapes of supply vessels and trooplanders cut low through the haze. At the staging post above the western approach, the Imperial forces were celebrating their victory, and the massed iron snakes were hailing their captain hero, Phobor. Great voices were raised in chanting song, gauntlets slapping against armor plate. The rite of the sharing of water had been made, and the iron snakes rejoiced in their triumph. Petrok and the men of Damocles' squad returned when the revelries were in full swing. Night was falling, and patterns of stars were winking in the clear sky above the veil of smoke. There were great lights up there, too. The running lights of orbiting Imperial battleships and escort vessels. Already, news of the successful reclamation was speeding through the warp to the chapter house on Ithaca. Below, in the camps, braziers were lit, and drums were beating. As their men broke camp and headed for the troopships in the next war zone, small groups of pale, fearful guard officers were being marched away under escort, bound for the punishment ships. Phobor's orders. They had failed. They would pay. The noise of armored vehicles and artillery units preparing to disembark filled the smoky evening. On the dark roadways below, lines of torches and vehicle lamps wound in snakes. Above, the clouds thundered as support ships brought technicians and workers back in to reman the foundries.
Master, I had become most concerned for your well-being, began Laxicanium Rhodos as Petrok reappeared.
He clapped his hands, and the midget things scurried out of the darkness to take Belus and the librarian's blackened gauntlets.
I'm well enough, Petrok said. Call up more staff. See to these men.
Priad led Damocles' squad into the camp. Andromach and Xander were half-carrying Natus, and Memnes supported Ilias. Before accepting any help or acknowledging anyone else present, Priad formed Damocles into a circle and had Memnes conduct the rite of the sharing of water to mark the end of their fight. Then they could rest, celebrate, be tended to. Rhodos observed the rite, waited until it was over, then barked more orders for surgeons and chapter servants. Figures darted out of the awning tents, some carrying supplies or medical tools. Ilias and Natus were taken to the healing tents immediately. Petrok watched, making sure the squad was well attended.
He was looking for you, Rhodos told the librarian quietly, from behind.
Phobor?
Petrok asked, turning.
Rhodos nodded. He wasn't pleased. It seemed to take the edge off the victory for him that he didn't have you running around, heeding his every order.
There were other things to do, more important things.
Rhodos nodded.
I do not question you, Master. But he will.
Now it looks...
Rhodos's voice trailed off. Phobor had appeared, powerful and dark against the fires. His scarred face had a grim set to it. The flames flashed off the double-headed snake crest on his shoulder plates.
Petrok, I wondered where you had damn well got to. My directions were clear enough, weren't they? I wanted an appraisal of my tactics.
Petrok took a drink from a goblet one of the midgets offered him before replying.
Your tactics were perfect. You proved that by taking the city for the love of the Emperor. You had no need of me.
Phobor shrugged. He was one of the ironclad warriors, Petrok knew. Total discipline, total courage, no imagination, no soul.
You have commended your men for the victory?
Petrok asked.
Aye. All of them,
Phobor nodded.
Perhaps not all. Let me tell you about Damocles and what was achieved on the other side of the city today. Let me tell you of another war, of steadfast courage, and of white heat.
Part 4. Red Rain. Undertaking to Ceres. Chapter 1. For as far as any of them could see, the place looked like a vast open wound. The soil of Ceres was rich in iron ore, which gave it a deep red cast. The climate circulated particles of the ore into the atmosphere, so that when it rained crimson liquid. It was raining now. It had been for weeks. Drizzle, bright as oxygenated blood, streamed down from low, dark clouds, turning the russet soil into soft, scarlet, wet folds that looked like raw flesh. Through the wounded land, the rhino crawled, heavy tracks slipping and thrashing in the red mire. Its grey, white, and red livery was washed a watery pink from the rain, and the chapter banners hanging from the rear frame were as dark as soaked bandages. Ahead lay Hecate, and death as bright and bloody as the rain. Detachments of fratry warriors from the chapter, beloved of the Emperor himself, had arrived on Ceres 2 weeks before to prosecute the sudden uprising of a chaos cult. Ceres was an agricultural world with a sparse population that accreted around small farm townships, each one separated from its neighbor by thousands of square kilometers of arable land. The uprising had engulfed Nibana, the main township and landing field, a dejected place of shantyhabs, grain hoppers, threshing mills, and freight yards. That had been the chapter's first port of call. Four full squads of towering armored forms, 40 warriors, had disembarked from their dropships at dawn and scoured the township, incinerating the cultists without question or quarter. The fighting had been intense but brief, lasting only until noon. Armed with autoguns, crop scythes, and fanatical zeal, the cultists were ruthless and formidable, but no match for the bolt guns and superhuman power of the infamous Space Marines. By noon, the Iron Snake's banner and the Imperial Eagle had been fluttering over the main guild hall of Nibana. Captain Phobor, the venerable and much-decorated commander of the Iron Snake mission, along with his squad officers, had then met with Inquisitor Mabuse, who had spent some months on Ceres uncovering the cult before contacting the chapter for aid. In the atrium of the guildhall, the phalanx of giant warriors stood in a semicircle around the robed, white-haired Inquisitor in dutiful silence as he appraised them of the situation. Mabuse began by praising their work in liberating Nibana. From outside came the thump of bolters as the assault squad finished its cleansing. The bodies of the fallen cultists, some 600 or more, had been stacked in an outlying granary and torched with flamers. The pungent scents of burning filled the air, despite the heavy rain.
They call themselves the Children of Khorne, Mabuse had said, his lofty voice faltering just slightly as he was forced to pronounce the dark name. We can presume the pun is lost on them. My investigation has shown that the taint was brought in from off-world. Nibana is the main lift port, and a large proportion of the population are indigent freight handlers and cargo men from a dozen other planets, some vermin coven practicing the foul ways secretly in their midst, carried the poison here and set it loose into the population.
Is it restricted to the main habitation?
Phobor asked, his voice metallic and expressionless as it filtered through his helmet speakers.
No, Captain, I don't believe it is.
Mabuse got to his feet and wandered over to an ornate side table. Standing to the left of Phobor, Brother Sergeant Priad of Damocles' squad watched the Inquisitor with curious eyes. He had served with the Iron Snakes for 9 years, and for the last four had commanded that decorated detail. He had seen things of such horror and such wonder in that time that no amount of training in the chapter hall of Charybdis could have fully prepared him. But he had never seen an Imperial Inquisitor close up before. He knew that no two were alike, and he knew that all were feared, perhaps as feared as the Space Marines themselves. Inquisitors were singular beings, braving both the physical dangers of the galaxy and the mental torments of limitless evil as they struggled and probed to uncover the taints of the great foulness. Mabuse was a tall, lean man in his 40s with a shock of white hair and a face angled and sculptural, as if the pale skin clung tightly to his skull. His robes were black and edged with golden braid, and his right hand, now Priad saw it, was a mechanical prosthetic of intricate golden calipers and gears. Mabius lifted an object from the table in his artificial hand. It was a figurine, about 30 centimeters high, woven from straw.
"A corn doll," Mabius told them, holding it up for them to see. "A votive object, common on so many rustic and agricultural worlds. Here on Ceres, they weave them at harvest time, one to represent each of the outlying harvest towns. And they are displayed here in the main guild hall during the time of celebration."
He lifted another from the table. There was something hideous and twisted about this one, even though it was only a doll woven from straw.
"I found this, and six more like it. Corn dolls, if you will. I see the pun is lost on you Marines, too. Whatever. Each one has been made according to the practices of various harvest townships, but the designs have been perverted to make them symbols of the cult."
Mabuse let the thing drop back onto the tabletop, as if he had no wish to touch it any longer, even with a hand made of metal.
"And from that we may infer that at least six of the outlying townships have been polluted by the cult. Though the main uprising here in Nibana has been quashed, it is vital that these outlying offshoots also be checked and, if necessary, burned and cleansed."
"You can identify the relevant townships from the dolls?"
Phobor asked.
"Yes,"
Mabuse said, as if such an arcane act of divination was child's play.
"You must send teams out at once, Captain. Send them out to purge these places. Until that is done, Ceres must be considered unclean."
There were 18 farm ships on Ceres outside Nibana. Mabuse and his aides had identified six positively from the loathsome dolls, but he insisted that all should be checked in turn. Phobor kept one squad with him to hold Nibana firm and sent out the other three to undertake the purge. Damocles' squad had been sent northwest. Four townships lay in that direction: Nairu, Iria, Flax, and Hecate. Of these, only the most distant, Hecate, had been positively marked by a doll. It took Priad and his squad a full day's hard drive across the rain-swept land to reach Nairu, and a further day to confirm it was free of taint. Another day's trek brought them to Iria, which also proved to be clean, though the fear and resentment of the townsfolk kept them suspicious and prolonged the search. Another day and a half's drive through fallow uplands followed, and the wet season greeted them with low storms, squalls of bloody vapor, and hard, red rain. They approached Flax on the seventh day after leaving Nibana. By then, reports had drifted in from the other two roving squads. Pleiades' squad had found cultists in the township of Broom, far to the south, and had been engaged in a running street battle for a day and a night. Main's squad had uncovered another nest of evil in a township called Sephoni, and had been forced to put it to the torch. Damocles reached Flax's farmship. Flax was dead. A week dead, Priad estimated. Damocles' squad moved out from their rhino transport and fanned through the blood-wet streets, finding nothing but burnt-out habitat sheds, ransacked grain hoppers, and rusting harvesters. Brother Calignis finally found the townsfolk. They had been harvested. 400 men, women, and children, butchered with corn scythes, their bodies and body parts piled in a corn silo to rot. The place was crawling with crop weevils. Priad voxed the news to Phobor at Nibana. Inquisitor Mabuse himself came on the line and questioned Priad closely. Was it a cult center that had chosen suicide? Was there any sign of true corruption?
Had the place been sacrificed by cultists from another farm ship? Hecate, perhaps? Mabuse relayed simple instructions as to what to look for. Priad listened carefully, and then dispatched his men to search. An hour later, he climbed into the back of the rhino, removed his helmet, and spoke to Mabuse on the Voxlink again. Outside, the bloody rain drizzled.
Lord, I think it is the work of outsiders. There is no trace of a shrine or a cult fastness in Flax. The only signs we can find are the blasphemous sigils daubed in blood on the sides of the granary where they piled the bodies. My men have found tracks trampled in the cornfields around the township. I thought at first it might be the signs of the murderer's escape, but the tracks wind and overlap. From the top of the granary barns, you can see they make a pattern. The trampled lines are quite deliberate. They form a vast, unholy symbol in the corn, hundreds of paces across. Inquisitor, I pray I never have to look upon such a sign of the ruinous powers again.
You have done well, Brother Sergeant. From your reports, I am sure that Flax was a sacrifice. A force of cultists, large enough to overwhelm 400 humans and slaughter them, is loose in your region. They made a statement out of Flax, a declaration. You must hunt them down. From the evidence as it presents to us, I'd hazard Hecate is the most likely place to start.
Damocles made ready to move onto Hecate, 2 days away. Priad had Brother Pindor take a flamer from the rhino and torch the cornfields, obliterating the crop mark. They also burned the dead and made blessings over the vast pyre, consecrating the innocent and the fallen in the name of the Emperor. Chapter 2 Hecate Farmship now lay before them, and the rhino puffed and wheezed its way up the muddy trackway towards the cluster of barns, crop silos, habitats, and mills. Brother Cylon drove the armored transport. In the rocking, bucking rear section, the men of Damocles' squad began a final weapons check and murmured private prayers of salvation and forbearance to themselves. Priad sat in the chain seat near the rear hatch, adjusting the fit of the hefty lightning claw around his right hand. The claw was the symbol of leadership for Damocles' squad. Sergeant Raphon, hallowed by his memory and his rest, had worn it before Priad, and had bequeathed it to the young snake on Rosetta when he fell 4 years before. Before Raphon, it had decorated the fist of Phaeus, heroic in battle. Before Phaeus, it had honored the might of Berios, mighty Ithacan. Before that, the great Sartes had made it wet with Erdol blood. Before that, Dice had carved his way to the sleep of champions with its electric majesty, ripping his way through the cruel hordes of the pirate Eldar scum. And before that, a line of heroes whose every name and every deed Priad knew, and who were with him every time he donned the claw. Right back to Damocles himself, great Damocles, greatest of the great, generations before, who had first raised the claw and given his name to the fighting team. Priad flexed the long, segmented fingers of the metal glove and watched as blue sparks hissed from digit to digit. The claw weighed close to 70 kilos and was 3 times the size of a human hand. But even without the strength-enhancing mechanics of his Mark VII power armor, Priad would not have been tested by the weight. He was of the Adeptus Astartes. He was a post-human titan, gene-forged to serve the Emperor of Terra from birth to death. Stripped of his armor, he was still a force of destruction, many times a man. Armored, his face hidden behind the expressionless visor of the Space Marine helm, his limbs encased in electric-motivated ceramite plates, his senses magnified 1,000-fold, he was a god-killer. Let the foulness spew up its dark deities. He would face them and slay them. Priad looked down into the open palm of the gleaming claw. He saw the nicks and dents of war that it wore as badges of valor. He knew them all. This deep scratch earned by Raphon in close combat with a demon thing on Brontax. This jagged scar made by Phaeus when he killed a chaos dreadnought. The missing digit tip Dice had left impaled in the chest of the warlord Grondahl when he had torn out that fiend's heart. Then he saw something else, looking back at him from the mirror surface of the steel glove. A face, pale, dark-haired, dark-eyed, resolute. Himself. For a scant moment it looked far too mortal and vulnerable. Priad took up his helmet and locked it into place. What he saw now, through the lenses of his battle visor, reflected back up from the polished claw, was a great deal more reassuring. A space marine. 10 minutes from the township, Cylon called over the trooper-to-trooper headset. Priad acknowledged and looked around at his men. One by one, he took in their power. Cools, shortest of them all, at just over 2 meters, was thickly set like a barrel, his long black hair braided up against his scalp as he put on his helmet. Ilias, his handsome face scarred and suited around his artificial eye, was loading his bolt clips. Xander was the youngest and tallest, his eyes golden and far away. Pindor, with his deep-set eyes and hawk look, was resetting his armor links. Natus was easing the pistons of his bionic left arm and sliding his bolt gun into its thigh pouch. Andromach, smiling as ever, was adjusting the weight of the massive plasma gun on his back harness. Calignes, sharp-faced, black-eyed, roguish, was cleaning the spine plugs in his neck before setting his helmet in place. Memnes, the apothecary, preserver of life, minister of death, grey-bearded and solemn, checked the contents of his narthesium before snapping it shut. Cylon was at the helm, stripped to the waist, so as to manhandle the controls better, his taut, muscled torso blistered with plug ducts and link implants. Damocles' squad, Priad thought. Praise be. God-killers, world-smiters, space marines, as great and as doughty as any band of iron snakes, to use that name. Priad looked over at old Memnes. The greybeard took the sign and raised his voice, beginning the litany of approaching war, which the other men joined. Memnes took them through the call of Ithaca and the loyalty oath of Charybdis, and each man answered the returns without hesitation. All of those who had not yet donned their helmets now did so. Cools took the helm of the rhino as Xander and Pindor helped Cylon to armor himself. Each lock and twist of the armor seals was praised and blessed. Captain Phobor had conducted the rite of the giving of water, the old iron snake's custom, at Nibana, when the force had first arrived, but now Memnes solemnly carried out the rite of sharing, as was appropriate before a battle. The tubular copper flask containing precious water from the endless seas of their homeworld Ithaca was passed around, and each man appointed his winged snake chest symbol with a drop or two as Memnes intoned the old words. Brother Andromach took out the iron snake standard, the snake crest double-looped, and fixed it to his shoulders. Brother Apothecary Memnes anointed it with water, too. The water was clear, like liquid glass. How unlike the blood that rains on us here, Priad thought. The rhino churned into the open main square of Hecate, and Cools slewed it to a halt. The place looked deserted. Priad popped the rear hatch, and Damocles' squad fanned out in formation, weapons armed and raised, hunting for movements. Nothing. So, very ominously like blood, the rain washed down over them all. Chapter 3. The fan of iron snakes spread down the main street of the farmship, scanning to all sides with their Auspex units, weapons braced ready in armored hands. 8 of them were on foot, with Priad at the head of the fan. Cools rolled the rhino along after them, turbines idling, the main rig of floods and searchlights ignited to probe the stormy darkness of the place. Rain sleeted in dark stripes through the beams of hard light. Cylon rode on top, in the open turret, his hands on the grips of the pintle-mounted storm bolter. There was no sound except the crunch of their footfalls, the low rumble of the transport, and the beat of the rain. Priad held up his left hand, showing 3 fingers, circled his hand, and pointed. Calignes, Xander, and Pindor moved ahead on the left sweep, checking doorways and the dingy breezeways between building units. Calignes signaled back, clear, and the 3 marines took up firing positions on the left side of the street. Priad gestured again, his right hand this time, power-gloved. Another 3 fingers, crackling electricity. Andromach led Ilias and Natus down the right side. There was a longer wait as Natus checked an open side barn that the farmers had used to store broken machinery and trash. He emerged and shook his head in a clear, over-emphatic gesture. Andromach checked the main entrance of what appeared to be the town hall. He turned back and made a gesture of clasping his hands together that Priad knew meant locked or chained. Priad strode across to Memnes, who was gazing around the dismal place speculatively. Priad's massive armored feet splashed through puddles of gore-like rainwater that had accumulated in the gouged tracks of the muddy street. It was like being in an abattoir that hadn't been cleaned in decades.
"Like flax, you think, Brother Apothecary?"
Priad asked, his vox burst punctuated at start and finish by a click of static. Memnes shook his head.
"Something feels different, Sergeant. Oh, we may find the townsfolk butchered in some corner, as Calignes did in flax, but there is something else."
Memnes snapped open the faceplate of his helmet and slid it up so that the red drizzle flecked his bare face. Had any other member of Damocles done such a thing without permission, Priad would have reprimanded him for presenting a target. But Memnes, old Memnes, had more experience than the others put together, and he could breathe in signs of danger. Sometimes, Priad knew well, it paid to let him scent the location.
"Fear, anticipation, anxiety, the air is heavy with it. There are living souls here, even though our auspexes don't show them."
"Hiding?"
"I would think so."
Priad wondered if he should open the rhino's tannoy and hail the hidden people with a declaration of support and rescue. He decided against it. The quiet was unnerving, but somehow he had no wish to break it. Priad crossed to where Andromach and Natus stood by the doors of the town hall. Pausing only to allow the pair to raise their weapons ready, he smashed the doors in with one savage kick. A broken trailer chain dragged across the floor from the splintered doors. Someone had locked themselves in. The trio entered, guns chasing for targets. The room, a huge hall with wooden pillars, was dark, and the floor was scattered with debris. One massive skylight far above was shattered, and rain streamed in, flooding the floor. Natus tried the wall lever for the lights, but the power was out. They switched to night vision and saw the place in a ghostly green phosphorescence.
"The floor is flooded. Rain."
Natus's voice crackled over the link.
"Not all of it,"
answered Andromach. He had reached a far corner that was slick with red liquid, though it was far away from the hole in the roof lights.
"That's rain. This is blood."
He was right. It was impossible to tell where the rain ended and the blood began, but by any standards, there was a lot of blood. It splashed and smeared the walls, and there were smudges and occasional handprints, but no sign of corpses. Priad moved through to a council chamber behind the main hall. There was more blood here, too, soaking the Hessian rugs and the soft furnishings of the rows of seats. The far-end wall was covered in framed placards listing the names of the town's mayors and the annual harvest yields in proud gold leaf. The boards were peppered and riddled with small arms fire, punctured, holed, and splintered. Priad realized there were thousands of spent shell cases littering the bloody floor.
"Quite a fight,"
said Andromach beside him.
"What were they shooting at?"
Natus asked, moving forwards past them. He pointed, and to their expert eyes it was clear that the gunfire damage made distinct arcs and sprays across the wall, as if sustained automatic fire had been trying to chase and catch targets that had moved with frightening speed. Andromach kicked open a door to the left, off the council room, and found stone closets and filthy cloakrooms. Blood covered the grimy blue tiles in here, too, and the wooden latrine stalls had been shot apart by frenzied automatic fire. Behind the council room, down a long, onyx-tiled hallway, they found a chapel dedicated to the emperor depicted as the provider of bounty and fruitful harvest. But the statue of the emperor, holding a sword in one hand and a plowshare in the other, had been decapitated, and the altar rails blasted into matchwood by more gunfire. One of the loathsome demon-formed dolls, what Inquisitor Mabuse had called, as if it was some wry joke, a corn doll, had been nailed to the statue's chest. Words composed of letters and symbols so foul they made Priad sick to see them had been daubed across the plinth. Beside him, The sergeant heard Natus cough and gag in his helmet, choking on his rising gorge.
Brother Natus?
Natus, over the link, made a mewling noise. Even the strongest of the fratry could fall prey to the insidious horrors of chaos, and this abomination had them all stunned and revolted. To desecrate the image of the Emperor with these marks. Priad knew he needed Natus sharp. Despite the horror that was in him, too, he turned on his brother Snake.
Natus!
Natus couldn't form a coherent word. Priad raised his left fist and smashed the back of his hand across Natus's armored faceplate. The warrior reeled, his visor dented.
Compose yourself, brother. This is precisely what the darkness wants. This is why they performed this sacrilege, to unman the likes of you.
I'm sorry, brother sergeant, said Natus,
stunned back into rational thought. Priad raised his bolter, swung around and blasted the deformed statue and the corn doll into fragments with a burst of explosive rounds. The noise was deafening. The voxlinks exploded into urgent life.
Weapons fire! We heard weapons fire! Brother Sergeant, respond! What's going on in there?
Stand easy,
Priad replied, exchanging the clip of his bolt gun deftly.
Just a little cleaning up. No targets, but the enemy is here. Be vigilant.
Outside, across the street, Xander heard his brother sergeant's words. With Calignes and Pindor, he held the positions on the left side of the thoroughfare. A small white dot showed on his Auspex suddenly, moving and jinking in a disordered pattern. 15 paces off, behind the row of agri-shops and smithies.
Contact, he reported.
Calignes and Pindor saw it too, and the trio swung around to address the buildings on the left side. Memnes crossed to them, readying his bolt gun. Cools moved the rhino up a little, with Cylon sweeping the storm bolter. Xander looked back at Memnes.
Do we go in?
Brother Sergeant?
Memnes queried.
We're coming out,
Priad returned over the link.
Move in.
Xander and Memnes moved off the street down a littered breezeway, a side alley that took them along behind the store barns and smithies into the backyards of shanty habitat terraces. Calignes and Pindor broke open the door of a tractor shed and advanced through the gloomy interior, passing farm vehicles under tarpaulin wraps. Rusty chains dangled from the low beams of the roof. The pair made a parallel course to Xander and Memnes, marking the blue dots of the space marines on their Auspex scanners. The white dot blinked ahead, between the two fronts. Xander and Memnes pushed through a back gate made of rain-warped pulpboard and slid along a crumbling brick wall, thick with black moss and lichen. They were in a narrow back ditch behind the habitats, where they backed onto the farm shops and the tractor shed. The light was bad and the rain heavier. The swirling black clouds seemed to be right down low over their heads. Even with night vision optics, visibility was poor.
There,
said Memnes, his visor still raised, pointing ahead.
It's in that outbuilding.
The structure was a single-story lean-to of corrugated iron. Xander and Memnes advanced and approached the entrance at the western end, furthest from the main street. Calignes signaled that he and Pindor were approaching the other end from the back of the tractor shed. Xander tried the door, easing the handle down, testing for locks. Something came out of the lean-to, taking the door off its frame and slamming it into Xander. The force was so great that the massive armored warrior was thrown backwards and through the moldering wall on the other side of the ditch. He took down a section of rotting bricks and ended up on his back in the yard of one of the terraced habitats. Just behind him, Memnes braced and fired, raking a bright line of explosive bolts through the air that blew out the framework of the lean-to's left side. He tried to track the shape that had exploded out of the shed and floored Xander. It was all he could do to see it. He glimpsed a quadruped, long and lean, twice the size of a man, it seemed. It was as blood red as the rain. Memnes saw a suggestion of teeth, huge as scythe blades, of claws, of a whipping tail, as long and knobbed and gristly as a length of human spine. All his shots missed, but they drove the thing back into the lean-to. He charged after it.
Calignes, for the love of terror, it's coming your way,
he bellowed into his link. At the far end of the shed, Calignes and Pindor tensed and trained fire, but were still too slow.
A red blur, something they couldn't even see but knew must be there, burst out of the shed and leapt up over their blasting guns. Calignus felt a hard impact and lurched away, winded and dazed, falling sideways and hard into a stack of tractor wheels. He heard Pindor exclaim over the vox, an utterance of surprise, roughly cut off. Priad, Andromach, and Natus, with Ilias close behind, came out of the rear of the tractor shop at a run. They found Calignus slumped against the rusting wheel hubs. Something had ripped through the front of his chest plating, making three jagged stripes in the ceramite. Blood leaked out of the torn armor. There was no sign of Pindor, except his fallen bolter. Chapter 4 They regrouped at the Rhino. Cylon and Natus carried Calignus in and tended to his wounds. The rents were deep and refused to clot. Blood wept out of him like rainwater. Xander was dazed but intact. Priad tuned up the Rhino's main auspects and hunted for Pindor, chasing the telltale trace of his armor, the identifying signal. There was nothing. It was as if Brother Pindor had simply vanished. Memnes could see how black Priad's mood was and how spooked Damocles was as a whole. They were all used to the superiority of being Adeptus Astartes, and on the rare occasions they encountered something more formidable, it left them dazed. For himself, Memnes couldn't begin to account for the speed of the thing. It had moved so fast, so powerfully. He hadn't even seen it clearly.
"I must find him," Priad told Memnes quietly. "Alive or dead, I will find Pindor."
Memnes nodded. He expected no less of his brave sergeant.
"I simply won't accept that he's just vanished."
Priad cast a dour look at the Rhino's Auspex unit.
"You felt life here, and we haven't found that on our scopes either."
"I felt something, Brother Sergeant. It may have been that thing."
"You felt fear, old friend. That thing faced down four iron snakes and took one of them as a trophy. It was not afraid."
"True. So we cannot trust the Auspex."
"No, indeed," said Priad. "Something's blocking it. Something that's hiding Pindor. The locals. And that thing.
Except at close range. Xander drew us to it when he got a fix."
Priad mused.
"Adamantium sometimes blocks Auspex scans.
There's none of that here, I fancy. Nor do I know of any local substance that can kill Imperial scans. If the Auspexes can't be trusted, it's because of witchery. The talents of the dark to lie and befuddle."
"Aye, I thought as much. All our instruments are blind. You were the only one who even glimpsed it."
"My visor was raised," noted Memnes.
Priad opened his own visor and turned to the men.
"We hunt a great evil that is invisible to our instruments. Open your visors. Use your eyes well."
It was unheard of, but they all obeyed. They opened their helmets and made themselves vulnerable, so as to be less vulnerable.
"Search teams,"
ordered Priad, his voice sounding strange and raw, unfiltered by the vox link.
"Section the town and take it apart."
The eight remaining active members of Damocles' squad searched Hecate, basement by basement, attic by attic, barn by barn, silo by silo. They worked in pairs. Calignus, whose wounds had at last been staunched by skin-wrap sprays from Memnes's Narthesium, stayed with the Rhino, watching the streets from the turret. As he searched, partnered by Cools, Priad wondered if he should report into Phobor and Mabuse at Nibana. He didn't know what he could tell them or what advice he could hope they would offer. In the end, he settled for a simple battle code message, saying they had engaged the cult and were pursuing its destruction. Several urgent responses came from Nibana, promising reinforcement. Some were from Mabuse, demanding to know the nature of the cult. Away from the Rhino, Priad ignored the chime of the vox messages. He would do this his way. He would find Pindor and salvage the situation. In the Rhino, Calignus heard the beep of the voxcaster, demanding response. It would involve a great deal of pain to climb down into the cabin, so he screened it out. Like Brother Sergeant Priad, he was sure there was nothing the power of Damocles' squad couldn't overcome. Besides, by the time help came, it would be days too late. Chapter 5 Ilias and Cylon found them in the basement crypts of the Ecclesiarchy Temple at the north end of the main street. 350 farmers and family members cowered, terrified, behind locked and barricaded doors. Why the Auspexes hadn't sensed them, none of Damocles could say. Under Memnes's supervision, the civilians were brought out and taken to shelter in the farmstead's mess hall, a long, low building full of trestle tables and crude metal chairs. Medical aid was provided by the apothecary, and Cylon and Xander were set to guard them, while Natus broke open the stores and made food for them on the mess hall's ranges. Priad and Andromach questioned the farm leaders, three scared and emaciated men.
"We heard what happened at Flax, so we decided to hide. Some thing came, killing dozens. That's when we hid in the crypt."
"This thing? What is it?" asked Priad.
"For the love of the Emperor, my lord, we didn't even see it. It came in, it slaughtered."
Priad looked over at Andromach.
"So Hecate is to be made a sacrifice, like Flax?"
"It seems so, Brother Sergeant, and therefore the cultists are hiding out there in the cornfields."
Priad got up and stalked the room. Something wasn't right. He could feel that as plainly as he was sure Memnes felt his sense. The doll back at Nibana clearly marked this place as a cult center, or at least a place where cultists were active. Yet there was nothing here but townsfolk driven underground by some beast, and an attempt made to bleed the populace for the worship of some otherness deity. Which was it? A cult center or an innocent place? It couldn't be both. And if it was innocent, what of the doll at Nibana? What had been its purpose? To bring them here? The leader of the farmers broke off his reverie.
"You will save us, won't you, brave Space Marine? For the love of the Emperor, please!"
Priad nodded. He would. He swore it. Ilias and Cools were searching the grain silos at the eastern edge of Hecate when the rains came down in a torrent. Flash floods of grain and squirming weevils burst from the sodden hoppers and washed around their feet. Ilias kept wanting to close his visor to shut out the blood rain, but Priad's instructions had been clear. He moved forward into the pelt, his gun ready. Ilias had lost an eye on Idon, and his bionic implant twitched and irked him. When he glimpsed the red shape flashing through the rain, he first thought it was a ghost image, a phantasm conjured by his artificial organ. Then he realized he could only see it through his real eye. All that they had surmised was true. The thing that stalked Hecate was only visible to naked sight. Mechanics and bionics, Auspexes and scanners were worthless. Ilias began to fire and to cry out. Cools ploughed over to join him, his own gun blazing, in time to see the great bestial thing with its whipping spinal cord tail flying out of the rain to take Ilias down. Cools emptied his clip into the monster. It was busy killing Ilias and thus formed a stationary target for an instant. If it hadn't paused to rip Ilias asunder, it would have been moving too fast for Cools to see. He blew it apart with a dozen placed shots. Tissue and bloody matter exploded into the downpour. Cools' sense of triumph was short-lived. Ilias had been decapitated and eviscerated by the thing in the blink of an eye. The dead iron snake lay sprawled beneath the exploded carcass of the demon. Cools opened his vox channel and reported in.
"We have slain the beast," Priad exclaimed to the farm folk around him.
"Damocles, with me. You people stay here until we return. Your nightmare is at an end."
Damocles' squad formed up and left the mess hall. None of them noticed the disquieted looks the farmers gave them. Cools watched over Ilias's body and waited for the others of Damocles to arrive. He tried to imagine what the thing's purpose had been. To kill and terrify the township, that was certain. But what else? What had it been protecting? Despite his orders, Cools crept forward and entered a silo to the left of the alley. What he saw chilled him to his soul. In the open metal bin of the silo's base, an altar had been arranged. Candles fluttered and hideous patterns had been inscribed on the walls. Pindor hung upended on a crucifix made of baler twine and wire. He had been tortured and abused, his armor stripped off. The children of Khorne, 20 of them, resembling those Khuls and his iron snakes brethren had slaughtered in Nibana,